Passover Seder, Lord, they ended by saying next year in Jerusalem. We don't mind if it doesn't make it till next year's Passover. We don't mind if it's tomorrow, if it's tonight. It will surely come. Your will with us this morning, in Jesus' name. Isaiah 58, I'm going to go there for a minute, kind of quickly. I'm just going to, most of this will be just reading today anyway, I think. Cry loud, this is New American Standard, cry loudly, do not hold back. Raise your voice like a trumpet, declare to my people their transgressions and to the house of Jacob their sins. And yet they seek me day by day and delight to know my ways as a nation that has done righteousness and has not forsaken the ordinances of their God. They ask me for just decisions. They delight in the nearness of God. They have, why have we fasted and you do not see? Why have we humbled ourselves and you do not notice? It's the same question the church asks itself. You know, we do spiritual disciplines and we don't seem to be any effect at some times going on. I'm that way, you're that way. You know, we can be this way one week and next week we're different. We do it, you know, we're closer. And then days can go, we can be close for years, and then we can just notice that relationship with God has kind of disappeared. Not really disappeared, just it's just not important. Or we're going through all the motions, but there doesn't seem to be anything happening. Why have we humbled ourselves and you do not notice this? Verse 3, behold, on the day of your fast you find your desire. You drive hard all your workers. Behold, you fast for contention and strife and to strike with a wicked fist. You don't fast like you do today to make your voice heard on high. There is a way to come before God. Whether it's, you know, fasting is just about so wanting to be with God that you don't do normal things. When you're just John Wimber one time, they asked him what was his secret of learning to pray for the sick and God starts doing things. He says, well, you just get out and start praying and then till you throw up. That's what he did. Just got so sick and tired of it. Couldn't take it anymore. We don't hear those stories, but the stories are they were at a Canyon Junior High School. They had a cafeteria there with a stage and a curtain, and that's where they would have church for a time in the Anaheim area. And they would all go back behind the curtain to pray. Tell story. Can I tell you one? So one of the guys, they're going back there and they're praying for God to come and to pray and praying for people, and nothing's happening. And one of the regulars that goes back there, he's just fed up with it. He goes behind the curtain and they pray. And as he's leaving the curtain, he says, I'm never going back behind that damn curtain again. He gets in his car, he starts driving home, and a Bible verse starts rolling around in his head. Just not the phrase, just the address of the verse. I don't even know where the verse is. Just a verse, over and over and over. So he stops, gets his Bible out when he gets in his driveway, looks up the verse. And the verse says, I dwelleth behind the curtain. This particular man had a chicken coop only thing he could think to do was go out the chicken coop. He took some manure from the chickens and put it on top of his head. Now, that's a serious something to do. Verse 5, it is a fast like this which I choose. He's trying to help them through Isaiah. This is what I choose. A day for a man to humble himself. It's for bowing one's head like a reed, for spreading out sackcloth and ashes like a bed. Will you call this a fast, even an acceptable day of the Lord? Is this not the fast which I choose, to loosen the bonds of wickedness, to undo the bands of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free and break every yoke? Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry, to bring the homeless poor into your house when you see the naked, to cover him, not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Then your light will break out like the dawn, and your recovery will steadily speed forth, and your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. And then you will call, and the Lord will answer. And you will cry, and he will say, here I am. If you remove the yoke from your midst, the pointing of your finger, the speaking wickedness, if you'll give yourself to the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then your light will rise in darkness and your gloom will become like midday. And the Lord will continually guide you and satisfy your desire in scorched places and give strength to your bones. And you'll be like a watered garden, like a spring water whose waters do not fail. Those from among you will rebuild the ancient ruins, and you will rise up the age-old foundations, and you will be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets in which to dwell. So, because I knew I was going to speak this week, I started looking like, well, I should go read in Isaiah. I should find a passage that I haven't read. And Isaiah 58 was the one. So I read that passage. So in about 15 minutes, on Friday I was down, or it was Thursday, and Debbie Handy drives up out there. She's coming to check the mail and the, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I hadn't talked to her in a few days, you know. So we come in and we sit down at a table right there, and I leave the front door unlocked for some. I didn't normally. I lock the door. I like to know who's standing behind me, you know, in this downtown. So a lady comes through the door. We're talking church back and forth. She's saying, yeah, the roofing fund, I think, has $12,880 in it now. That's great. Yeah, we're talking. This lady comes to the door, and she says, hey, are y'all like staff here? Yeah, I'm the pastor. She's the bookkeeper. What can we help you with? My power is going to be turned off this afternoon unless I can pay some money on my power bill. Could y'all possibly help me? Now, I have just read this 15 minutes before. I look at Debbie, I go, I said, well, how much do you need? Just 50. I said, I looked at Debbie, and she looked at me without nodding. I didn't tell that look, you know. She said, I said, why don't you got your, do you have your account number and name? She says, it's in the car. Oh, why don't you go get it? Debbie says, that's fine. I said, sure is. I just read this chapter a minute ago. I better give her some money. Probably the next thing I need to do is go to the power company. I'll text you if you don't hear from me, text me. I've forgotten for some reason, but I went immediately, found the church checkbook, went and got my truck, drove to the power company, put some money on her bill for the next thing I was going to do. I'm not very smart, but I can tell when things kind of fit together. Okay, turn me to Matthew chapter. Thought I'd marked all this stuff. Hold on, let's see. Matthew 24. So the plan of the ages has been going along. From Adam and Eve, when they sin, the Lord in effect says, the serpent has bruised your heel, but I'm going to crush his head. In the very beginning, the very earliest verses in the beginning of these scriptures, God gave to Moses, you know, the Genesis, all this story. We start having prophets telling us about an anointed one, a Messiah is going to come. We get illustration versions of this. We get Moses, the deliverer, as a sample of this. We get other stories coming in the fullness of time. You know, the baby's born. Astrologers from the east come because they've seen a special condition happen in the stars. They start following it. They come to King Herod. You know, Herod wants to go, well, where is this baby going to be born? Well, one of his smart guys says, in Bethlehem, O king. That's what the scriptures say. Well, why don't you guys from the east, wherever you call it, you know, why don't you go and find the baby, and I want to come worship him too, you know, which is not true. And he, by his own admission to his own soldiers, after the wise men are led in a dream to go on and not go back the way they came, and he figures out that he's been tricked, he sends his soldiers, he says, go kill every boy baby in Bethlehem that's 2 years and younger. And he fulfills a prophecy that he probably doesn't know about either that says, Rachel is crying for her babies and she cannot be comforted. Pharaoh had tried to kill Moses' deliverer earlier, you know, and they put Moses in a basket. Jesus is born. Jesus grows up. Jesus begins his ministry at age 30 to 33. Friday night, we had a Seder, which means order. Is that what Lisa said? Where is she? Order? Right? And thank goodness I didn't go look all that back up, because I thought, boy, I hope somebody doesn't ask me, how does this do? There is just so much in history about the day, the timing, but the thing is that Easter and Passover doesn't always hit because they're using a lunar calendar and stuff, and you know, so we did Seder on the Jewish Passover. All the Orthodox Jews would be, way to go, if you're going to do this, you might as well do it on the right night. So we were doing it on the right night, at the right time, at sunset. They blew shofars. Really, wow. That's just, wow, that was so cool. At the beginning and at the end, it was powerful. Jesus, last week, Jamie talked about Palm Sunday. Now, you know, they didn't just use palms. That was one of them. They got tree limbs and some clothes, and like what you were saying, you know, they were coming to town saying glory to God in the highest. And I don't know how many is out there, but I don't think it looked like the Macy's parade. I think it was a smaller number than that, probably. It was enough of a ruckus that they noticed it in town that this was going on. In fact, if I remember, some of them said, tell your followers to be quiet. And he says, hey, if they don't cry out, the rocks will cry out. That would have been interesting. I wish they hadn't been talking. I like to, like, well, what would that be like? He comes to town, and this is the week of where they're going to check on the, you know, they've been putting up the lamb for so many days. They've been copying the pattern that Moses had been given by God for the very first Passover, and they've been doing this. And if you start reading the history, they didn't always do things exactly on time. But by Jesus' time, they had got this worked out pretty well, and they were doing it. And then they would start adding some more things to it down through history. But they're doing it. And so Jesus has come to town as the Lamb, like John has said prophetically, behold the Lamb that takes away the sins. So he's come to town, comes in on the with the limbs on the street and the people's clothes, and all the people are saying these things. And he goes to the temple, he checks it out, and then he goes outside of town to Bethany, where Martha and Mary and Lazarus live. Probably staying with them, maybe. I don't know. But they go, you know, a little bit outside of town at night before they close the gates, not be inside the city. And they close the gates at sunset and open it, you know, for people. So different things have been happening on different days. And Matthew 24 takes place, I don't know if it's 2 days. Somewhere I had a list and I didn't bring it with me, the actual, that not, you get buried in detail. But different things happen on different days of this week, of this Holy Week, right? And it's going to end with him doing the Passover supper, the meal, Judas going out, Jesus and the guys going to the garden, Jesus going over and praying, Judas coming and kissing him, them taking him off, going to Peter denying him, the rooster crows, Jesus is crucified, it turns dark from noon until 3, you know, and that's because he's now the Lamb, you know, and that's where the Father's not looking on him. And Jesus is saying things, why have you left me? Why, you know, he can't feel him. He's felt him all the time, but he's not feeling Dad now because Dad's kind of turned his back on him. He's become the sin bearer. He has become the Lamb. I think that's what he's dreading when he's in the garden. He says, if there's any way this cup can be taken from me, would you take this away? I think he's talking about, he knows. He has, maybe he knows what it's going to feel like exactly, or maybe he just knows kind of what it's going to feel like, but he knows he's about to take on everybody's rebellion. Every rebellion of every person that will be his child. It's not being crucified. A bunch of people, the Romans crucified. That's hard. This is harder. My God, why have you forsaken me? It's dark. From noon until 3. And it is at 3, he's still in control. He says, into your hands I commend my spirit. And just before that, he says, about the Romans and the ones doing, he says, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. Don't hold this against them. They're just doing their job. He gives it up. The centurion says, gosh, he probably is the Son of God. Or even if he said a Son of a God, he's still like, he knows this was somebody. This just wasn't your ordinary guy we just crucified. But before that, one time, and I always kind of like think this is probably late in the day. If I was going over there, I would be going over. He's left Jerusalem. He's gone out of the gates. He's gone across the Kidron Valley, which is down there, and that's the trash pit. The stuff's always burning. There's always smoke and stuff. And you go over the Kidron Valley, and you start up the side, and there's a garden over there. Mount of Olives is a little garden on a hill. And you can sit in it, and you can face, and you can see the temple. So I imagine, I'm thinking that the sun's setting on it. I'd go over where the sun would reflect off of it. Herod's been fixing it up. This is a second temple. And he's got it looking really good. And Jesus has already driven out the money changers and all the other things and had a bunch of dialogue back and forth with the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And so he's sitting over there. Chapter 24, Matthew. So Jesus came out of the temple and was going away with his disciples and came up to a point of the temple buildings, and he's not there yet. And he says to them, do you not see these things? Because I'm sure they're like talking about, wow, this place is amazing. Truly I say to you, there's not one stone here that's going to be left upon another, which will not be torn down. And as he's sitting, now he's gone out, you know, on his own Mount of Olives. He's sitting on the Mount of Olives, verse 3. The disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, When will these things happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And now we get a bunch of information about sort of timeline mountain ranges. At my house, when you look toward Atala, and I'll watch the radar about, like, where is that tornado coming? You know, because the first range that from my house is Lookout Mountain over on this side, and then down this way is Chandler Mountain. And then I know to look past it, and even though I can't see the interstate, I know the interstate is sitting down here, and then I have another range. And then it's a little smaller range, you know, and then there's US 11 on the other side, and then there is Sand Mountain. These are like time periods. Jesus is about to talk about the closest mountain that's coming up, and then he's seeing way off the last mountain, the second coming time period, last mountain, and this coming mountain. Now, this coming mountain is going to be, Brooke, is it 69 AD? When did the Romans really get ticked off with Jerusalem and come to wipe? 69 or 70, right? One of y'all that's right there. Okay. So, you know, they get ticked off with the Jews, and they surround the city, and they end up, the temple is just one thing. There's not a rock left on top of a rock. All these beautifully cut, couldn't get a piece of paper between the stone kind of thing. I mean, that's sort of like the Egyptians, you know. Here I go, off tangents. Those famous three pyramids that we see still were coated with, they had gold on them. The stones still, some of the stones, you can't get a piece of paper between the stones of some of the pyramids. All this time later, amazing how they could cut these stones and stack them, that they're so close together that there's not gaps in some of them that a paper won't go through them. The Jews were very good at building. I imagine this was an awesome-looking building. Not as cool as Solomon's, but still a really good building. A really good building. And now I'm going to jump again. Boy, yeah, I didn't have 2 cups of coffee, but I didn't sleep a lot last night. My wife is with grandchildren and the other grandchildren in Indianapolis, and it's like I'm just out of whack. I find that if your wife's not in town, you tend to stay at the building a long time. Like, I made up a bunch of mud back there, and I was not paying attention. I guess I was daydreaming. You have to mix the thinset with water. And, you know, if you put so much water, you got to keep adding thinset or you'd have to start over. And I'm not going to start over. By the time that I got the right consistency, I had a half a bucket of thinset. Now, to spread a half a bucket of thinset on these bricks means that, and they don't just sit there because the bricks are like, they're blooming. You know what blooming is with a brick? It starts sending out little shards of brick and water, and then they kind of freeze, and they look sort of cute like crystals, except you touch them with your finger and they fall off. Not good. You have to scrape it. Anyway, I stayed down there on the back wall in the other room until 6 o'clock last night because I just couldn't run out of mud. I wasn't going to throw it away. So I go home like I'm just dead. You know, I'm just so tired that I don't really sleep well. Okay, I knew you wanted to hear that. That was right there in Matthew. You missed it. That was in one of the verses. I don't know why I'm even telling you that. Anyway, Mount of Olives. I'm hoping it'll come back, but I don't think it's going to come back. Oh, yes, okay. Here's the other side. Do any of you keep up with the ultra-Orthodox Jews in Jerusalem or that live around there and work there? Okay, they're sort of like if you go to New York City, have you seen a Hasidic Jew? They have little curls and hats, and the girls wear certain things, and the boys do, and they're very by the book. I mean, they're more Orthodox than the Orthodox. I mean, they are the ultimate Jewish practicing stuff, okay? so anyway, they have been collecting stuff. I was telling Joy about this earlier. They started collecting a few years ago the parts that they needed to do temple worship. And Clay Rowe, one of my friends, and a lot of y'all know Clay, Clay keeps up with this stuff. And he'd say, hey, if you got $1 million, you could pay for a menorah. They're wanting they need $1 million to buy a pure gold menorah, to build a pure gold menorah. They had a whole shopping list. And they had a lot of stuff they'd already bought, but they still needed so many more menorahs, you know, that's the candlestick thing. Okay. Recently, a few months ago, this could have been three weeks ago or 3 months ago. They have been trying, they've got everything to make temple worship, to make worship happen. Orthodox Jewish worship, except they needed a red heifer. They have been trying for years to find a red heifer. They have to bring it before certain priests. There's certain steps that they go through to make sure that there's a pure blood, no blemish on this red heifer. They've got one. It was officially approved like a month or two ago. Now what this says is that tonight, tomorrow night, the daytime, the news is going to come on and they're going to say, well, they've gone off and done it. They set them up a tent last night. They did worship according to the prescribed order. It's going to happen. They've got everything they need. I don't know what will happen next, but they've got it. You don't have to build a temple. You just have to set up a tent to do all this. Time is moving on. All the time this is moving on. Okay. Wow, how's it 11:36? Because I know. What'll be the sign of the coming of the end of the age? Verse 3. Jesus answered and said to them, see to it that no one misleads you. Now, if you're about to die because you know it's coming this week, you know, you're going to start telling everybody stuff that's really important because you're not going to see them a whole lot. So this is one of those, not going to see you a whole lot kind of stuff. This is like really important stuff that you're wanting to pass on to the guys and the gals. Okay. See to it that no one misleads you, verse 4. For many will come in my name saying, I am the Messiah, I am the Christ, and will mislead many. And you'll be hearing of wars and rumors of war. See that you're not frightened. Okay, so what part do we get from that? Work at not being frightened no matter what's going on in the Middle East. The pivot is Jerusalem. It's not Washington, D.C. We could totally lose Washington, D.C. in a suitcase bomb and this timetable will continue. It's the center of the map is Jerusalem. In fact, the Temple Mount is the center of the center of the map. That's the place to be watching. Okay. For those things must take place, but not yet the end. Verse 7. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and various places there'll be famines and earthquakes, but all these things are merely the beginning of birth pains. And then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you'll be hated by all nations because of my name. Why did they attack a church in Sri Lanka? It's in his name. At that time, many will fall away and will betray one another and hate one another. And many false prophets will arise and will mislead many because lawlessness is increased. Most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, he'll be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken up through Daniel the prophet, now, I'm not going to jump there, but Daniel's talking about a statue. And if you go to Revelation, there is a talking statue in the Holy of Holies, which, you know, would make any Jewish person go, oy vey. There's a statue, not only that, but it talks. I'm not sure it's AI, but you know what? Alexa might be the forerunner of something that's in the temple. I don't, you know, that's when it happens, if you and I are alive, which is really possible, we'll know. Okay. He says to them, though, but here's this double mountain range thing. 16, he's saying, those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. Now, whatever was really going on that happened there, the Romans probably didn't. I have to go look it up or something. During this time period, in the first mountain range of the Romans coming, Jesus is giving this out in about 33 AD, so we've got another 36 years, 37 years before this event takes place, but it's going to take place. If you go read like stuff like Josephus, some of those that were Jewish historians, there were people that started having dreams. People started having visions of seeing chariots in the sky over Jerusalem. There were people that started leaving town because they thought something was going to happen. Spiritually, God was moving some people out. The Romans surrounded the city. It was a lot of lost life, a lot of destruction. Romans really know how to, you know, do something in and make a point out of it when they want to make a point. Back in that time period. Whoever's on the verse 17, he's just giving them instructions. Whoever's on the rooftop must not go down to get things. In other words, when this starts, you better go. You better leave right. This is not time to pack. You need to leave town right now if you want to live. If you're in the field, don't go back. You left your coat, don't go back. What are those that are pregnant? Verse 19, those that are nursing babies in those days, pray that your flight's not going to be in the winter or it's not going to be on a Sabbath, but then there's going to be great tribulation such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now, nor ever will. Now, this might be talking to the people in Jerusalem because that's where he's giving this, talking about that. Or it could be a double, some of this could be double, talking about this near the second coming too. You don't know. Unless those days be cut short, no life would have been saved, but for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Even if anyone says to you, behold, here's the Christ, the Messiah, or there he is, don't believe him. For false prophets will arise and will show, verse 24, show great signs and wonders as to mislead, if possibly even the elect. Now, I think that's probably sounds more like second coming talk right there. Behold, I've told you in advance. You know, that, behold, ta-da, you know, whatever word, you know, voila. I've told you in advance. This is a big deal. So if they say to you, behold, he's in the wilderness, don't go out. Behold, he's in the inner rooms, don't believe him. For now he's going to, I think, talk about the second coming. For just as the lightning comes from the east and flashes even to the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. I don't know what this line, Jamie, this sounds like one of those you get. Whenever the corpse is, there the vultures will gather. Why they had to stick that in there? I don't know what, I have no idea. But we'll know once we see it. You know, like, oh, it'll probably be on the news, you know. I'm not even jumping there. 29, but immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and this Old Testament, because mine's in all capitals, and the moon will be given its will not give its light, and the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky. And then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. And that's because they have been following him, and now they know we're in trouble. You know, that's where the part where I think Revelation says they cry out that the rocks would cover them, like they could hide under away. I mean, wouldn't you want to get away from this person coming in the sky? The Son of Man will come in the clouds of the sky with great power and great glory. 31, he'll send forth his angels with a great trumpet. They'll gather together his elect from the four winds and from one end of the sky to the other. Fascinating. Space station stuff kind of talk. Now, learn the parable from the fig tree. When its leaves have already become tender and put forth its leaves, you know the summer is branches. You know that summer's near. So you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near right at the door. Truly, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day and hour, no one knows. So if somebody has a book, don't go buy the book because it's not in there, no matter what they say. Not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone. There's only one person in all of everything that knows. It's Dad. He's the only one that knows. Jesus doesn't mind. Not his job. Totally the Son of God, but he doesn't mind. He'd be out doing other things. He's always talking to Dad on our behalf. Dad's saying, hey, I got a place for you right here, right at my right hand, until I make your enemies your footstool. Still going on. It's going on today. It's going to go on tomorrow unless he comes back today or tomorrow. Verse 37, for the coming of the Son of Man is going to be just like the days of Noah. And as in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage. It's going to seem really normal until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they didn't understand until the flood came and took them all away. The best commentators on the news service is going to miss it. Guarantee you. They're not going to get it. But little old you and I, if you have the Holy Spirit inside of you, something's going to start. Little something started, you know, you're just not right. You're just sort of a little bit more stirred up than you used to be. You're just kind of excited. You don't know what it is exactly. You see stuff and you just, Holy Spirit's just going, it's coming. It's coming. Getting close. You know, the Holy Spirit can't keep a secret like that part anyway. He goes on, verse 40, there'll be two men in the field, one's taken, one's left, two women grinding at the mill, one's taken, one's left. Therefore, be on the alert, for you don't know which day your Lord is coming. But be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what time of the night that the thief was coming, he would have been on the alert or wouldn't have allowed his house to be broken into. For this reason, you must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour which you don't think he will. Who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household is to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that slave whom his master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he'll put him in charge of all his possessions. But if the evil slave says in his heart, my master's not coming for a long time, and begins to beat his fellow slaves and eat and drink with drunkards, and the master of that slave will come on a day when he doesn't expect him and an hour which he doesn't know, and will cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, maybe it's technically not exactly like that. Maybe that's for the storytelling part of it, but it doesn't seem like it goes well for one that is kind of doing their own thing. You want to go on? Let's do a little, want to do some more? Is this at all interesting? Kind of? I read really fast. So, chapter 25. So the kingdom of heaven, he's giving illustrations to them because he loves to talk in parables to the guys, and gals. It's probably, if I know girls, the girls usually figure these out, and the guys are going, I don't get it. Here's what he said. What do you think it means, honey? And then she tells, you know. And then he asks his teenage daughter, and she tells, and says the same thing that mom said. Wow, yeah, because, you know, that's how it really goes. So then the guy goes back and tells his buddies, he goes, oh, yeah, my wife said the same thing. That's how it really goes. So the kingdom of heaven will be compared to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish and five were smart. And when the the foolish one took their lamp. They didn't take any oil with them, but the prudent took oil in their flask along with their lamps. Now, when the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. But at midnight, there was a shout. Behold, the bridegroom, come out to meet him. You know, that's a method that they use, is like have a waiting party come in the middle of the night. Then all the virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the prudent, give us some of your oil. Our lamps are going out. But the prudent answered and said, no, there's not enough for us and you too. Go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves. And while they were going away to the purchase, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. And later the other virgins came also saying, Lord, Lord, open up for us. And he's going to answer and say, truly, I say to you, I don't know you. Be on the alert then, for you don't know the day nor the hour. He says it's just like a man about to go on a journey who calls his own slaves and entrusts his possessions to them. To one he gives 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, and each according to his own ability. He went out on his journey, and immediately the one who received the 5 went and traded with him and gained 5 more. In the same manner, he's the one who received 2. He does that, and the one that got the 1 talent dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. And the one who received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 to me. See, I've gained 5 more. The master says to him, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I'm going to put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. The one who received 2 came and said, Master, you entrusted me with 2. See, I've gained 2 more. The master says to him, well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I'm going to put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one who received the 1 talent came up and said, Master, I knew you were to be a hard man, reaping where you didn't sow and gaining where you scattered no seed, and I was afraid. So I went away and I hid your talent in the ground. See, here's back what's yours. And the master says, verse 26, you wicked and lazy slave. You knew that I reap where I didn't sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has, more shall be given, and to him he'll have abundance, but from the one who doesn't have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Throw out the worthless slave into the outer darkness, in the place where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. But when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, and he'll sit on his glorious throne, and all the nations will be gathered before him, and he'll separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he'll put the sheep on his right and the goats on the left. And then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. And I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I was naked, you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, you came to see me. And then the righteous will answer him and say, Lord, when did we see you were hungry, feed you, or thirsty, or give you something to drink? When did we see you as a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and come to you? And the king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, the least of them, you did it to me. And then he'll say to those on his left, depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire, which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, and you didn't give me anything to eat. I was thirsty. You know how it goes right there. And they'll say, but when? In verse 45, and he'll answer them, saying, truly I say to you, to the extent that you didn't do it to one of the least of these, you didn't do it to me. These will go away in eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. I didn't make that part up. I was just reading to you what's in the scriptures. He's wonderful. He's loving. He's serious. He's just. This is Resurrection Sunday. He will appear for the next 40 days off and on to his disciples and to a group of 500 as he goes up in the air. And a couple of angels will be standing there looking at him, and after a few minutes will say, "What you doing? Why are you looking up? He told you that the way that he left is the way he's coming back. And the clock is running. It's ticking."